I've just been Skyped by a chap called Pavel. Hello, Pavel. Originally from Serbia, now living in Detroit. And he's asking me via the Skype about the cycle of narcissism. And what he's actually asked is a very good question. Is he said, do you think narcissism can cycle? Do you think that this can go on for generations? The black sheep of the family that we mentioned who are the scapegoats have become empaths, and they then attract narcissists, and they then breed, and you have an empath and a narcissist breeding together, and they then produce the same thing in it, and does the cycle carry on? Yes, it can definitely carry on that way. It's highly likely that the victims of narcissists will, who are aware, if they stay asleep, if they take the blue pill and stay asleep, then they'll become narcissists themselves as a way of self-soothing. I've never had experience of a narcissistic person who, when I meet the parents, either both or one is a narcissist. So yes, narcissism breeds narcissism. If they take the red pill and wake up, which is the more painful path, I'm using this matrix analogy a lot recently because I like it. If you take the red pill and you wake up, here's what happens. You wake up, it's horrible. It's awful to be awake. It's the most dreadful, painful thing ever. You're in this nice, remember the Matrix, you're in this nice pink pod of goo, and like all the nutrients you need are given to you, and of course all the nutrients the machine needs are just taken out of you, and you're completely bald, like not even eyebrows. And then when you wake up to find you're this pale, you know, hairless freak who's never had cold air on their skin, with a tube up your bum and down your throat, and everything is painful. Just having the air on your skin is painful. That's what it's like waking up. That's what it's like having that red pill moment. That's why they call it red pill moment. Is you wake up, and you wake up to this shitty reality in which you don't live a nice, normal, happy life. You're actually like a fucking tramp stuck in a submarine, a flying submarine, with a bunch of other smelly tramps who haven't had a shower ever because there isn't a shower. And you can't even eat real food. You just eat protein-packed porridge. You guys remember The Matrix, right? And everybody's got like a skinhead, and everybody smells, and everybody's like wearing a bin bag. That's why when you say, oh, I want to wake up, I want enlightenment, it's like, do you really? Do you fucking really? So he asked the question about empaths creating narcissism, and I said, yeah, empathics can create narcissism, and so does indifference. And he said, Pavel says, how does indifference create narcissism? And I was like, oh, I thought everybody knew this. I actually assumed on the channel that people knew this. Narcissism is can often be, what do you call it? I'm sorry that the phrase has gone out of my mind, but there is a phrase for indifferent parents, or parents who just aren't disinterested parents. So if you have very, very disinterested or indifferent parents, it can produce what is called overachiever syndrome in the children. Indifferent parents are usually narcissists because they're so wrapped up in their own lives, in the movie that they're living of their own life, that they can't see anybody else, including the humans that they've just created, the small humans that they should feel all this love and affection for, which is a biological fucking imperative. For some reason, these fucking psychopathic fucking fuck-faced lizards are switched off to that, and they fucking well don't feel it, the fucks. So the indifference that they feel can actually breed narcissism in the kids. And I've seen this in myself and in other family members close to me. The overachiever syndrome, that because what should happen is, you know, the parents, both parents should be there supporting the child, saying, well done, son, well done, daughter, you know, come forward, come up. And parents should provide guidance. And if, you know, in times gone by, if the parents couldn't do that, if they were inept, then the rest of the tribe would take over, or the parents' parents would take over. I've mentioned the Celestine Prophecy before, whether you like that book or not, it doesn't really matter. But what matters is that it actually suggested that in days gone by, the grandparents would parent the children. And it makes sense to do that because as I've watched my parents age, they've become more mature. People don't stop maturing. It's not like, oh, I'm 30, I'm an adult. Oh, I'm 70, I'm the same adult I was when I was 30. No, their issues continue to resolve. And as I'm talking to clients, they've noticed the same thing. You can have like a difficult parent who maybe with time and over, you know, the course of a life, not that they become, you know, enlightened per se or have any major differences, but maybe they look back and regret. Maybe they look back and say, hey, you know, I didn't really do the best job I could. I wish I could do it again. And then, you know, through your kids, they have the opportunity to try and rebalance their own karma and their own guilt as well. But indifference from the parent, it's interesting. From the parental unit in the system, the family is a system. The tribe is a system. It's an ecosystem. It's its own psychological ecosystem. If the parent isn't providing the energy downward, the attention, the support and the guidance downward, then the child has to do more. The child's mind says, oh, mummy and daddy are ignoring me. Oh, what should I do? Okay, I must do more. I'll achieve more. I'll go further. I'll travel more. I'll make more money. I'll try and become famous. I'll try and do exceptional things so that one day, maybe, they'll eventually say, hey, son or daughter, I acknowledge you. I acknowledge what you did. I'm proud of you. Well done. You've lived a good life. These are the things that we need. Sounds very, very simple, but some parents aren't capable of doing that. This whole thing is quite complicated, you know, because there are different generations, and different generations grow up with different cultural imperatives. In my opinion, there seems to be waves here. You know, you had the post-World War II, the baby boomer generation seems to be quite narcissistic, and I'm certainly not the first person to suggest that. There's a lot of articles out there about that. If you put in baby boomer and narcissism into Google and your parents are of the baby boomer generation, you'll find a lot of people saying, hey, they could actually be narcissists. So they were indifferent as parents. That made us want to produce more and do more, but that actually creates a kind of narcissism in us because, you know, it's our lives, we want to be achievers, blah, blah, blah. That maybe would apply to your Generation X's, right? Who are the children of the baby boomers. So the indifference of them can produce narcissistic behaviors and self-obsessive structures of being. But also, what I've now seen as Generation X grows up and gets into their 40s and they have kids, they then neurotically don't want to do what their parents did. They don't want to be indifferent. They want to be very loving. So they become super empathic, and they're actually creating a really weird... Like, if I go back to my hometown and my extended family unit, I've heard other people say this. People without kids look at the people with kids and are like, what the fuck is wrong with you? This is like a cult. And I agree with them. There seems to be this worship of children nowadays where they're absolutely precious, the most precious things in the world. And they're filmed, they're photographed, they're Facebooked, they're just upheld. You know, the fucking that Lion King moment of upholding the little cub. You know, and it's that also is not healthy. And that will breed a kind of narcissism. Now, whether that will be a nasty narcissism, maybe not. I mean, a lot of these kids, as I'm talking to them and they're growing up, they seem actually to be quite empathic. But I can't imagine that degree of overwhelming smothering of affection is good for anybody and constantly being told you're special, you're special, you're special. It's not healthy. You know, in terms of parenting, we've got to strike that balance. If we're going to parent kids or even be role models for kids, if you don't biologically have your own children, you've got to find a balance. So obviously, most people watching this channel, you're not going to be indifferent, so I don't need to warn you about that. But what I do need to warn you about as empaths is don't be self-indulgent with the affection. When you stroke a kitten and you go, oh, kitten, it's delicious, it's lovely, I want to rub my face on its belly fur. Obviously, you're kind of stroking yourself. When you stroke the kitten, you're stroking yourself. When you stroke another human, you're stroking yourself. So be aware of the... No, I'm not saying don't do it. Do it. But I'm saying be aware of the self-indulgence of affection, the self-indulgence of support. Oh, I'm into therapy. Let me support you. Let me help you. Okay, fine. But there is a self-indulgence there. So just be aware of it. Because for children, too little attention is bad, but too much attention is not good. It's not good to be that, you know, I mean, I've seen parents behaving in my hometown, in my family unit, in a very, very strange way. And I believe it's as a reaction against the baby boomer generation, who are their parents. Their parents are very selfish, very self-involved, very materialistic, very narcissistic and indifferent. So they're like, well, I don't want to be like those fuckers, so I'm going to give loads of attention and loads of affection. Be careful. Be careful of doing that. It's you can create highly dependent people like that. I mean, what the fuck are they going to do when you eventually die? They'll be absolutely ruined. And it, you know, we've got to strike a balance in everything. That is one of the things that I'm saying a lot to people in coaching right now is have the express intent. I move towards sanity. I move towards peace. I move towards balance. Because if you don't and you drift, this culture is not pointed at sanity. This cultural template is not pointed at balance. It's very much pointing you at imbalance. It wants you neurotic. It wants you sick. It wants you crazy because it makes you a better consumer. So you really have to take that red pill and you know, redo your programming. So indifference can create narcissistic patterns of behavior because of the overachiever syndrome. Too much empathy and too much smothering. I haven't seen these kids grow up yet, but I have seen one example of a smothered child growing up with just smothered with way too much affection. She's 26 with the mental age, in my estimation, of about a 19 or 20-year-old. Actually, she's 27 now. She suffered from dreadful anxiety attacks, dreadful agoraphobia and rage. Why? Because she's frustrated. Why is she frustrated? Because she's a child in an adult's body and she's never learned how to grow up. Why? Because the parents have to teach you how to grow up. Indifference is an essential part of parenting. I was appalled when I was of age enough to realize what was going on in the world, maybe about age 12, that people didn't read books on parenting before parenting. I was like, that's what is this nonsense? Everybody surely has read one book. I remember asking my mum and she said, no, I didn't read any books. I was like, the fuck, that's irresponsible. If you're going to drive a car, you get lessons first. What the fuck is this nonsense? So I was a weird kid. I was an eccentric kid. I got a book on parenting, and I only really remember one of the lessons in it, and it was about. And I'll leave you with this: if a kid falls over and bangs its knee, you can see different parenting styles. One parenting style is, "Oh, are you okay?" And that makes the child go, "Oh, no pain, oh, cry." And the other one is, "Oh, you fell over, you dafty. Go on, carry on and play." And they go, "Okay." So you're actually providing a perceptual filter for what the external experience is. Oh, pain. Obviously, if the child's knee is broken, then this isn't going to make any difference. The pain is the pain. The injury is the injury. But if it's a scuffed knee, you want to teach the child to go, it's just a bump. But you control what the perceptual filter is and what the meaning is of the experience by your reaction. And the way to know this is look. If the child is really injured, then it's really injured. But if the child hurts itself, it will look to mummy or daddy for the response. Pain, what's the meaning? What's the meaning, father? What's the meaning, mother? And then mother or father goes, oh, you're fine, just carry on and play. Or, oh my God, I'm there. And then the meaning is, oh my God, and all of that's internalized in the computer. And then any drama in life, because life is gonna have drama in it, obviously, that's inevitable, becomes mass hysteria and absolute craziness and doors being smashed to pieces. I'm thinking of a specific example now where people fly off the handle because they don't have a coping mechanism. The extension of that is now parents being encouraged to allow babies to learn to self-soothe. So that's in the same line, different issue. I'm going to wrap this video up now. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.